And welcome to another edition of the TDN Writers Room podcast for May 30th, 2023. My name is Bill Finley. I'm a correspondent for the Thoroughbred Daily News and co-host of the Down the Stretch show with Dave Johnson on SiriusXM Radio.
I am Randy Moss of NBC Sports and also the Buyer Speed Figure team.
Zoe Kavman here with First Racing. Doodle in the background. He's finally here over my left shoulder. I want to remind you that the TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Keeneland.
I was going to say that, so you didn't need to take it away. I was so psyched to get that. I never get that right, but this week I was all set to get it done. Okay, so obviously on the show, we have to talk about the ongoing situation at Churchill Downs. Let's just put that on hold for now, because I didn't want to start off, you know, with doom and gloom, because there's just been so much of that lately. It gets a little depressing. I want to start off with a very interesting concept that was announced last week, the National Thoroughbred League. Is going to start up in Labor Day weekend at Kentucky Downs. In a nutshell, it's trying to take horse racing and turn it into a team sport. There's going to be horses representing six different cities. They're going to be a team. They're going to compete against one another at different races, five series of races around the U.S. Emerald Downs are going to go to. They're going to go to Tampa Bay Downs for the end. The winning stable will collect $1 million. And the people behind it are saying that, you know, why can't horse racing have what other sports have? In baseball, you don't root for an individual player. You root for your team. I root for the Boston Red Sox, which is sometimes a tough thing to do. But this concept coming to thoroughbred racing, it's an interesting idea. I'm going to be upfront about it. I don't think it'll work. But having said that, good for these people for trying something new and different. And maybe I'll be wrong. Maybe it'll be a big success. It is really outside the box. And we always complain that racing doesn't do enough beyond the status quo or doesn't do enough to try to attract new fans. Then if we say that, we shouldn't complain about this. Who knows? Maybe it'll be very successful. Randy?
That's exactly the way I feel, Bill. You know, we don't get enough new ideas like this in thoroughbred racing. And so I would love to see it succeed. I also have reservations primarily from a financial standpoint of how it can make money. But then I remind myself, I was in the newspaper business back in 1983 when the Breeders' Cup concept was first announced. And I wrote a lot of stories about it. And there were a lot of people in the sport that did not believe that the Breeders' Cup was a good idea, did not see any way that it could make money and it could be successful. And lo and behold, now here we are in 2023, and it's one of the highlights of the calendar. From a financial standpoint, okay, each of the six teams is going to have a six-horse stable at the outset. So that's 36 horses that have to be purchased. And the quotes in the Daily Racing Form article that I read from Matt Hegarty was that the goal is to buy horses privately that are upper allowance or lower stakes caliber. Okay. Ballpark, I would put that at about $200,000 a horse times 36. Okay. That's $7.2 million. Of an outlay plus the $1 million grand prize at the end, that's $8.2 million. These horses have to be trained. The auction is going to take place in July. So you're talking basically 6 months. Conservatively, that's another $500,000. So now we're up to $8.7 million. And in order to make money on this, they're saying that they're going to make money on sponsorships and on ticket sales to events that are associated with the five racing days, okay? Events, if you're going to sell tickets to events and you're going to make any money off of it, the events cost a lot of money to stage and put on as well, plus advertising for those events, travel for for the racehorses. Now you're up over $9 million in outlay that you're going to have to try to make. So among all the challenges, logistical challenges, keeping the horses healthy, et cetera, the financial part of it is going to be, I think, the biggest nut to crack. I'm rooting like heck for them. I hope they can make it work because racing needs new ideas. But it's going to be a tough go.
It's definitely going to be a very tough go. In fact, I was speaking to Tom Lute, who's going to be the president of the NTL, the National Thoroughbred League, just the other day about this when the press release came out. I'm like, hey, Tom, what gives with this? Why are we just hearing about it? And he said it's been in the works for a while and they're just trying to bring new people in. He said, we're not here to try and please people already in the business. We're trying to bring in new people. I did a little bit of research on it earlier today and you know, I found it in Rolling Stone magazine. Rick Ross and Nelly, the New York Giants, Kayvon Thibodeaux, trying to get into horse racing. They're all going to own a stake in one of the teams. So they're trying to bring people into the sport of horse racing. And there's no way we can sit here and knock trying to bring new people in. Now, I don't know how the money's going to work. You have the guy in charge of Forbes who's going to be in charge of all the money. They have a big team behind it. Chantel Sutherland, Mike Smith are going to be on as advisors. They've got a whole team set in place. How it's going to work, I don't know. I do know that the Thoroughbred League in England started a few years ago, and that was met very dubiously, especially over in England. And I think it's in its third year now. They got Frankie Dettori on board in his final tour. They have six teams. I think it's Wales, London, the Midlands, all kinds of teams going together, and it's actually gained some traction, and it's taken a little bit of time. You've had all kinds of trainers that have signed up for it, even Sir Michael Stout, Donica O'Brien, Aidan O'Brien. They're all on the roster of trainers. So these are people that are making things happen, and the fact that it's survived its infancy in England gives me a little bit of hope on how this is going to move forward, because things move a lot slower in England. People are a lot more stuffy and resistant to change over there. The fact that they've got some kind of traction going and they've got the likes of Michael Stout and Frankie Dettori on board is a thumbs up. So anything that's going to try and bring new people to the sport, I'm all for. And I wish them the best of luck. I really do. I'm really looking forward to it. They're going to have a big concert in Nashville. The first foray into the races will be at Kentucky Downs, which I don't think you could find a better spot. It's a fabulous boutique meet. There's plenty of room for everyone. So I think they're going to have a great time. It'd be fun to try and grab a ticket and go along and see what's going on. I don't know who they're going to have play, but it's going to be somebody big for sure.
Yeah, we'll find out about that. But, you know, a couple things to keep in mind. The ticket prices are up for Kentucky Downs and the VIP admission is $350. Oh, well, that's kind of a tough sell as well. And Randy, what you said about the economics of it, I'm going to go one step further. I think they're going to find out very quickly that six horses per team is not enough.
Right.
Because we know how these horses, how fragile they are. You know, somebody has a cough one day. You know, you need to replace them in the lineup, so to speak. So, you know, we'll find out about that. The other thing, too, is I think it's not just horse racing. Everybody's trying to be Formula One auto racing now. And this is, I don't know the first thing about Formula One, I don't care, but I know it's the hottest thing in the world. And, you know, what they did was they turned it into events. It's not just a race, it's a big event. And they have this Netflix series that has been apparently wildly popular. I watched one episode, I was bored, and I never watched another one again. But they're going to have, you know, someone behind the scenes filming this. Chad Brown has signed up to be the trainer of Team New York. So, you know, they'll be following Chad behind the scenes and whatnot. So, you know, some interesting concepts there. But, you know, Randy, I think you hit the nail on the head. But having said that, you know, they look like they got a lot of backing. Like these are not, you know, people scraping together nickels to put this together.
Yeah, I mean, I looked at the timing of it. It's going to start on Labor Day weekend. It's going to end on December 31st. If you run these races every 4 weeks, then you could have 5 weeks into December 31st. So the spacing of the races seems to work okay. They're going to run three races at a time on those five different weeks. And so I just kind of thought, okay, it'll probably be like a mile and a 16th on dirt, 6 furlongs on dirt, and a mile on the grass. So each team with 6 horses would probably have to have 2 in each category. And like you said, I mean, I just don't think that's enough given the attrition rate of today's racehorses. That's just going to be one of the challenges. But hey, you know, they got a lot of things, it sounds like, that they've got a head start on, and a lot of big names in the pipeline. So let's hope it works.
Yeah, and I actually tackled Tom about that and the buying of the horses and said, you know, he's going to go out and start buying horses. And I'm like, well, and now the press release came out, a lot more people have gone to Tom and said, well, what about this and what about that? The subject came up of, why not lease some horses off a trainer at the particular racetrack you're going to? But they want to keep the same horses so they can have a following, so to speak, and take these horses around to the different tracks and make stars out of them, which is fair enough, but it's going to be a tough task.
Yeah. And also they've said these horses are not going to race outside of the league.
Correct.
So if some horse gets on fire and wins 3 in a row and is running 102 buyer figures, we're not going to see them, so they say, in anything but the league races. So that's another interesting factor that as well. What's going on at Keeneland, Zoe?
The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Keeneland, home of the world's yearling sale. The energy, magic, and momentum of a September yearling sale returns September the 11th through the 23rd. Learn more at theworldsyearlingsale.com.
If this place could talk, it would roar. It would say, this is racing. This beating heart in the heart of horse country. Steady and strong beneath the roar. Reminding us why. For the love of the horse. For generations to come.
Vote for a horse with strong family values and the performance to back it up.
It's going to be early voting in the opener.
And early voting wins the Withers wire to wire.
He took his campaign to Pimlico with a classic win in the Grade 1 Preakness Stakes.
Epicenter trying to gain late. It's early voting to take it from Epicenter, a length and a half.
Early voting, Gunrunner's only classic winner. New to Coolmore America.
The TDN Writers' Room is brought to you by Coolmore. It was a big holiday weekend for Coolmore sired runners. Over in France, American Pharoah's Group 1 winner Above the Curve returned to her winning ways on Sunday with a 2-length victory in the Group 2 Prix Corrida at Saint-Cloud. Classic Empire's consistent daughter Classy Edition won her 4th career stakes race at Belmont in the Critical Eye Stakes on Memorial Day. And Justifies, Justin's Legacy, proved to be another to keep an eye on Sunday when the colt romped in a 5-length maiden special weight victory at Gulfstream. Meanwhile, CRK stable Smart Mo caught the eye at Santa Anita Friday with a debut-winning maiden special weight performance for trainer John Sheriffs. All in all, not a bad weekend for Coolmore sires.
You know what? That's a good time to find out what's going on at Santa Anita with Zoe Cabman. Here you go. First things first at Santa Anita.
Wow. Here we are, Doodle. 3 grade ones, a great day of racing, and a win you're in. We deserve a drink. Cheers.
And it's Macadamia and Tiago Pereira to win the Gamely. Quatroel got up.
She just developed into a nice, classy filly. She didn't come here that way. She just came here just quirky. Feel good, want to kick up her heels in the stall. But I think, you know, as she's gotten older and she's matured, she's put it all together. And thankfully, it was for a grade one win here.
It's Exalted holding on. Exalted is a grade one winner.
Don't you love it when a plan comes together? The grade one winning your rent and she make a vow.
You can't say that was the plan at the beginning. I mean, first condition, yeah, man. Second condition, now. Let's see how it goes and winning this stake. That was, let's give it a try.
Whose idea was it to put him on the grass? Come on, be honest. Whose was it initially?
Well, that was my idea, but I just felt like it was 2 years late with it. It was better late than never, they say, right?
How you feeling right now?
Yeah, I'm feeling awful good. I mean, to win a Shoemaker Mile, pretty fun.
Just thrilled with how well the jockey rode our horse.
And we are thrilled that you won. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Paroli, game as ever on the outside, but Defunded is too strong. And he takes them all the way in the Hollywood Gold Cup.
Defunded takes the Grade 1 Hollywood Gold Cup, launching this guy with the white hair, Bob Baffert, into history, becoming the all-time winningest trainer in Gold Cup history. How are you feeling with this win?
You know, he's a tough horse. And this horse today, he got the lead, and he wasn't going to let anybody pass him, so... You know, he's just improving, getting better, and the mile and a quarter, was happy to see him get a mile and a quarter.
Just a reminder, racing does continue this Friday with a 1 o'clock post time at Santa Anita, and we will have stakes action this weekend with the Summertime Oaks on Saturday and the Affirm Stakes on Sunday.
So on Monday at Santa Anita, three Grade 1 races, the Hollywood Gold Cup, Grade 1 purse 400,000, the Shoemaker Mile, and also the Gamely. The story of the day, there was a couple stories of the day, but, you know, we focus in on the Hollywood Gold Cup. And, you know, I think most people would agree with me. I said that this is not a very inspiring division, the older dirt males. But right now, Defunded is as good as we have out there. You know, he's been consistent. He won the Californian. He comes back and wins this race for Bob Baffert. Another interesting thing about this is that you think of Baffert, oh, he's just a three-year-old guy. He doesn't ever have good older horses. Well, how about the fact that he's won this race now 9 times? So Zoe, resonated with you from that big Monday card at Santa Anita?
Wow. A gate-to-wire explosion by Defunded was pretty awesome, to be honest. Juan Hernandez rode him on point to the mark. He's always a great workhorse, especially at Santa Anita. This is his home track. He went one better than he went last year when he was second. And it was really cool to see Mike Pegram in the winner's circle with Carl Watson, because they were the guys that gave Bob his very first Gold Cup victory back in, was it 92? I can't remember. It was back with Real Quiet. So this, the 9th one is the record breaker and the first one with Real Quiet. So Defunded was stellar. I'm not sure about Country Grammar. He kind of stubbed his toe a little bit. I'm not sure coming back quite so quickly from a grueling campaign was what he really wanted to do. He never really shows that sparkle, but he didn't grind on like he usually does. So a little disappointing from Country Grammar, but Defunded really was a force to be reckoned with, and that puts him right in the mix for the Breeders' Cup Classic, which will be right here at Santa Anita.
Also, the big story, the Shoemaker Mile, was Exalted, and boy, has this horse turned his career around for Peter Urton. Was just an okay dirt horse. He's now a terror on the turf. 4-for-4, his second graded stakes win in a row, a Grade 1 winner now. They didn't make the switch with him until he was 6 years old, but it's like the reverse cigar here, a better late than never. And Zoe, that's a win and you're in for the Breeders' Cup Mile, and a long way to go for the Breeders' Cup. And Randy, feel free to weigh in on this as well if you'd like. But right now at the Turf Mile division in America, he's as good as anybody out there, I would imagine.
He was terrific. And I don't know if it's just the turf course or he's a true, true out and out turf horse, because it's a big, heavy horse. He looks like a dirt horse. I can see why Peter was so reluctant to run him on the grass in the first place, because he's a big old clunky old thing. But God, he loves his turf course. And they went fast. And he was right up there with them. It almost looked like Juan Hernandez, winning his second Grade 1 on the day, was almost moving a little bit prematurely and going after the winners. But boy, he ran a good race. The favorite, that Pratt rode, what's his name, Randy? Why can't I think of it off the top of my head?
Phil Hong Martin. Kong Harry?
Hong Kong Harry. He got stuck in traffic and was stymied a little bit. I'm not sure anyone was actually going to beat Exalted on the day. And I asked Peter afterwards, I'm like, who was the genius that suddenly decided at 5 years old to stick him on the turf course? And he was like, well, it was me. It was me. But eventually... But it's a cool story. It really is, Randy.
Yeah, the pedigree doesn't exactly scream turf. He's by twirling candy out of a gilded time mare, but obviously when they finally got him on it, he was a superstar. And about Defunded.
Yeah.
You know, by numbers, the horses in the East Coast, your Smile Happies, your West Willpowers, your Art Collectors are better horses by the numbers, but I'm not so sure the numbers really do justice to defund it. All you have to do is look at his race before last in the Californian, where he completely missed the break and still circled the field and drew off and won by 3 lengths. And with the Breeders' Cup at Santa Anita this year, I mean, that's going to be he's going to be tough to beat if he holds form between now and then. So, yeah, some big grade ones at Santa Anita. But those two, I think, really are the most interesting two.
Well, we have Macadamia as well. She took down the Gamely for trainer Phil D'Amato, his first grade one win in the race with Tiago Pereira, who's been on an absolute tear. And she's a tricky mare to ride. She's tough in the morning. She'll drop the rider in the morning. Tiago goes out each and every week and works her on the training track without fail. So kudos to him. But I wanted to mention one more horse who we will see in the Breeders' Cup Sprint. Spirit of McKenna. Did you guys see how good he was in the triple bend on Saturday?
He is a beast.
And he is a beast to look at. He is one of the most beautiful horses you can see in the flesh. Like Ghost Sapper out of a Gilded Time mare. If you could put the description or the picture of what a horse should look like with that kind of breeding, it's him. He is amazing.
Well, Randy, let's get to a subject I know we don't really want to talk about, but we have to. Because this situation in Churchill Downs is just raging out of control and reminds me a lot of what happened at Santa Anita in 2019 for two reasons. Number one, it's a terrible story. And number two, the mainstream media has latched on to this. And we now have 12 horses that have died at Churchill Downs since started with Wild on Ice breaking down leading up to the Kentucky Derby. And, you know, please don't blame the media for this. They're covering a news right. story. That is something that needs to be covered. But, you know, we all, when this happens, we all really worry about what we call the social license, racing social license that has been given to it to continue to operate. And I don't think racing is going to suffer any drastic changes or any tracks are going to go out of business or anything like that, or any state's going to shut racing down within the next few years. But how might this affect things going down the road? And, you know, where are we going to be 25 years from now? Is really a big part of the discussion. I wish I had the answers. Yeah. But a couple of good things have happened. And today we had a press conference over HISA, talked about what they're doing to try to control the situation and get a handle on that. They're working in consort with the Kentucky Racing Commission and Churchill Downs to see if they can come up with anything that is a common factor that has led to these horses breaking down. And Lisa Lazarus has said that they can't find anything wrong with the track. So they don't know really what the story is, but at least they are working on that. A couple somewhat minor things. I mean, it's cliche to say this, but again, the sport has to do everything possible in its control to get this situation under control and to try to take these numbers and to lessen them as much as can. And I don't think it's really appropriate to point any fingers at Churchill Downs. I don't know that they've done anything wrong, but I will bring up one example of where maybe racing, you know, should have thought something like this through. In New York, there's a rule called the poor performance list. And if a horse loses by 25 lengths or more, they go on this poor performance list and they can't get off of it until they have a satisfactory workout and, it is examined by a veterinarian. And I think the reason why is if a horse is losing by this many lengths, it may not be because the horse is slow. It could mean that the horse has some sort of problems that is keeping it from performing. The horse that broke down most recently, Kimberly Dream, had lost her last three races by a combined 65 and three quarter lengths, including one where she lost by 32 and a quarter lengths. I can argue that horse should not have been racing. And I think a lot of people would agree with me. But you know what? Even if I'm right about that, that gets the number down to 11. And 11 is awful. It's just maybe not quite as awful as 12. That's one little thing that I would hope that Churchill Downs and all racetracks would look at immediately as we're looking for what can we do to make changes to make the situation better.
Yeah. Heiss is holding a veterinary summit in Kentucky, in Lexington, where... you know, they're going to try to address the situation. And in the Daily Racing Form, Matt Haggerty reported from Lisa Lazarus that she's had talks with Churchill Downs management about the possibility of suspending racing at Churchill for the short term until they can get a grip on what's going on. Now, that's just conjecture. You know, that's not anything for sure, but it just shows you the level of concern that there is about this situation right now. And there needs to be a level of concern. People, I think too often, Bill, within the sport of horse racing, and it's human nature, I think, they want to try to focus in on one thing that's causing problems, regardless of what problems are, when normally it's much more complicated than that. It's what they call multifactorial. There are various different things that combine in a perfect storm, along with randomness, to cause something like this. Generally, it's got something to do with the racing surface. Now, Churchill Downs says they have had three different examinations of the racing surface, found nothing wrong, but they're calling in Dennis Moore, who's one of the country's foremost experts on racing surfaces. They've already had Mick Peterson look at it, but Dennis Moore is now going to give a fresh set of eyes on exactly what's going on with the surface. But as the studies have shown over a long period of time, the big majority of the horses that suffer catastrophic breakdowns have some sort of undetected pre-existing injury that leads to it, that creates a weakness that then leads to a catastrophic breakdown. And the answer is going to have to be the same at Churchill Downs as it was at Santa Anita. And it's going to have to be the same at other racetracks around the country who felt like they could kind of put this off because it might be more expensive. And because, oh, this is Santa Anita's problem. It's not our problem. It's everybody's problem. They're going to have to come up with a technology, which is in the beginning stages out there, but just more veterinary presence, more examinations, more x-rays, more everything to try to identify these problem horses before it gets to the point where we have what's going on right now at Churchill Downs. So it's various. And what you pointed out about, you know, poor performance in horses that can sometimes lead to outcomes like this. You know, there are a lot of things that are going to have to be considered. It's not just one answer. It's not just one magic wand. But it's something the entire industry, not just Kentucky, not just Santa Anita, is going to have to look long and hard at.
Right. Sorry, I got a little bone to pick with you. You twice referred to stories written by Matt Haggerty in the Daily Racing Form.
Yeah.
You got reading a thoroughbred day. Who knows? I wrote both those stories,
Bill,
too.
Sorry about that, Bill.
All right. bring a little light to an otherwise dreary, awful conversation that we're having here. Hey, Randy, in tomorrow's Thoroughbred Daily News, which I know you will be reading now because
yes, I
chastise you, Earl Mack, very prominent person in racing and, you know, great guy. He's come out with something that I think I talked about with you last week. When we say as a unified group, those of us in horse racing, which you know means journalists like ourselves, broadcasters, trainers, owners, racetrack management, et cetera, we tell the public that we are doing everything in our power to make the situation better. Well, we're not, because the most obvious solution is staring us right in the face. And I know it's not going to happen because of the economics of the sport. But when horses break down, I'm repeating what I said last week, but I want to say it again. When horses break down, 3.5 times more likely to break down a catastrophic injury in a dirt race than a synthetic surface race, then, you know, why are we not going back to synthetic surfaces? I think we gave up on them way too early. And again, it's a pipe dream. I know it's never going to happen, but you know, damn it, isn't it time for people to start taking that a little bit more seriously? I think that it is.
Yeah, I mean, New York, when they had a spate of breakdowns a while back, I want to say the mid-2010s, they instituted some changes and such, including maintenance of the racetrack, that brought the injury rate down, not to the synthetic level, but extremely low in New York, at New York racetracks. And now that's kind of begun to tick back up a little bit. But yeah, I mean, horse racing can't say that we've done everything if there is a surface change out there that that could make a huge difference. But I agree with you. It's obviously was tried in California at all three Southern California tracks. The reviews were mixed, although the catastrophic breakdown rate plummeted. And I don't think it's going to happen either, just because of the economics of the sport and the fact that you've got decades and decades of breeding for dirt, and synthetics is not dirt, and that would have to change as well. But, you know, it is something that maybe more tracks should take a look at.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely, I agree with you. I mean, it's one of the answers, but it's not going to happen. Please read Earl Mack's op-ed in the Thoroughbred Daily News, because he makes some very good points about that. The other thing too is that, you know, if something's going on at your racetrack, pick up the phone and call Santa Anita. I want to know everything that you did. I don't care how much it cost. I don't care, you know, how much extra effort it was. Again, it's not the be all and end all. Horses still break down at Santa Anita, but rather, you know, it's become a rather rare rare happening out there. I hope somebody at Churchill Downs has picked up the phone, called Belinda Stronach or somebody at Santa Anita and said, "Tell us how you did this, and we're going to follow every single step that you follow," because you know this was a huge problem there. And it's still a problem, but it's a lot less of a problem. So, call Aiden Butler, call somebody that works for Santa Anita and pick their brains about this, because they have done a better job than really anybody else in the industry addressing these problems.
Couldn't agree more. And hopefully we'll have some brighter news to report in coming weeks about this particular situation. Meanwhile, on a much lighter note, the TD and Riders Room is also brought to you by the Pennsylvania Horse Breeders Association. The two big Pennsylvania breeds that everybody's been talking about, Caravelle and Angel of Empire. There's news on Caravelle. She won't be going to Royalize Ascot after all. They are now going to Point Caravelle for the Jiper Stakes, that turf sprint on the Belmont Stakes undercard on June the 10th. As far as Angel of Empire, right now, all systems go for the Kentucky Derby third place finisher to come back in the Belmont Stakes along with his stablemate Hitch Shove in the Brad Cox barn. Bill, I thought Angel of Empire ran a very solid race in the Kentucky Derby. I know the pace helped him, but I thought he was going best of all in the last furlong to finish third.
Yeah, Randy, we still got a week and a half or so to make our Belmont picks. But if you put the proverbial gun to my head, I think I might pick him right now. I've kind of soured a little bit on Tappet Trice because I didn't like his Derby. I mean, we had talked after the Tampa Bay Derby. Well, we know who's going to win the Belmont. Now it's going to be Tappet Trice. And he's going to be really overbet in there. But Angel of Empire, you can't fault him. He ran a great race in the Kentucky Derby. Yes, the pace was to his benefit, but he was right in there fighting to the end. And it does look like a horse that can go a mile and a half. So I might be picking the PA bred in the Belmont Stakes. We'll find out.
I like Angel of Empire. Give me some of that Angel of Empire. How many is Pletcher going to have in there?
How many what?
How many is Pletcher going to have in there and Cox? I mean, are they going to have the bulk of the field?
Oh, I think two each. Wouldn't it be right now? Tappet Trice and Forte and Hit Show. Oh, I know. I believe Brad Cox is considering a third horse in there, but his big two will be Hit Show and Angel of Empire. And as we were recording this on Tuesday, it looks like all systems are go for National Treasure. He has worked to the satisfaction of his team at Belmont Park. It looks like he is a go in the Belmont Stakes, which is good to see the Preakness winner coming back in the third leg of the Triple Crown. We don't even get that all the time anymore, as everybody wants to head to the hills after the Kentucky Derby is over. So, reasons why we should change the Triple Crown, right, Randy? I finally talked you into it, right?
All right, that again brought to you by the Pennsylvania Horse Breeders Association. Coming up next, the Green Group Guest of the Week. Here's a hint. Ready? And down the stretch they come. This is going to be fun.
The PA Horse Breeders Association presents the Pennsylvania Stallion Series. Six races for PA sire, PA bred two-year-olds at Parks. Two $100,000 contests at 5.5 furlongs. On August 21st, PA Day at the races.
September 23rd, PA Derby Day, has two races at 6.5 furlongs, both with a $150,000 purse. And in December, two races going long, each worth $200,000. For more, go to PABred.com.
The fastest horse of the week is brought to you by Windstar Farm, and the sire, Jacob West, once called, quote, hands down, one of the most physically impressive horses I have ever seen. More on that stallion later. But first, the fastest horse of the week, based on buyer speed figures, is Defunded with his win in the Hollywood Gold Cup. And by the way, three cheers for Santa Anita, going back to that name. I know they didn't just do it this year, but instead of Gold Cup at Santa Anita, a nod to history, the Hollywood Gold Cup, won by Defunded, who is head and shoulders right now, the best older horse in California. Again, only a 100 buyer speed figure, but I don't think that quite does the horse justice the way he's been dominating his competition out there, even when he didn't get off to a fast start a couple of races back in the Californian, right? The three amigos, Pegram, Watson, Whiteman, getting back on track after, of course, they lost having a meltdown at Pimlico. So that's a nice little turnaround for them. It just shows you in horse racing, you can be down one week and sky high the next. So congratulations to all involved in yet another, a ninth Hollywood Gold Cup win. We said that earlier for trainer Bob Baffert. Defunded, the fastest horse of the week. Now, for that fast siren Windstar, Independence Hall. He was an undefeated juvenile, set a new stakes record in the Nashua, earning a 101 buyer, winning by a dozen lengths. He was a stakes winner at 2, 3, and 4, from 6.5 furlongs to 9 furlongs, all track conditions, went wire to wire to win by 7.25 in the Fayette with a 105 buyer. And he's from the immediate family of Breeders' Cup Sprint winner Desert Stormer and multiple Grade 1 winner Better Lucky. There's a lot to like there from Independence Hall, standing for $10,000 at Windstar. Now, the Green Group Guest of the Week, brought to you, of course, by the Green Group, a tax consulting and advisory firm specializing in the thoroughbred industry. For more information, go to www.greenco.com.
And we bring in now the Green Group Guest of the Week. This is a special treat for me. Green Group Guest of the Week is legendary announcer Dave Johnson. And I don't throw that term out loosely. He is indeed a legend. And he's been my broadcast partner in Sirius XM Radio for these last 17, 18 years or down the stretch. And it's always great to have Dave on and talk to him, go down memory lane, but especially with the Belmont Stakes coming up, because this is the 50th anniversary of Secretariat's win in the Belmont. And Dave Johnson was on the roof of Belmont that day calling the race for the New York Racing Association. And Dave, welcome. And in between the Belmont and the last time you saw Secretariat at a New York track was the Wood Memorial, where he was defeated. How much did things change over those 7, 8 weeks or whatever?
It was amazing, Bill, and it's good to be here with my old buddies today. When he left after the Wood, he had been defeated, and he was a loser, basically, even though when he went to Kentucky, he was still the favorite in the Kentucky Derby. But the point was, he had been defeated, and if he lost the Kentucky Derby, he was definitely going to be retired. So with the Kentucky Derby on the horizon, he won it. He won the Preakness. And when he returned to Belmont, he returned not as a loser from the Wood, but on the cusp of greatness, because he was 1 mile and a half away from immortality. So that was quite a switch from as he left Belmont and when he came back.
Well, Dave, we know you're a man of many talents. You're a Renaissance kind of guy, not just race caller, but you've been involved with Broadway, Sirius XM. I didn't realize, though, that you're actually a record producer.
Yes.
As well. You remember this?
I do. And there's a story behind it, Randy. When I was working as the track announcer for New York Racing Association, we went into December for the first time. And I went to my boss, Jack Crumpy, and I said, this would be a great giveaway. It was only a dollar. It was $1 to produce. And I said, let's give it away on the first Saturday. And anybody who comes in gets the secretary. He was a huge star. And, you know, I love Jack Crumpy, but he said to me, well, what? It's a record? And I said, yeah. He said, who has a record player? I don't have a record player. And that was the end of that. So I produced it. I sold it through the racing form. I think we sold 10,000 of them for $8 or $10 a piece. And then I sold them on cassettes. That was, doesn't seem like it, Randy, but it was 50 years ago.
I don't know how I wound up with it. I think Don Grisham gave it to me as a Christmas gift. It's got 15 of your race calls of Secretariat's races on here.
No. I called 16, but I used a lot of other people. I used Phil Georgeff and other announcers. I called 16 of his races.
Right.
But there's not 16 of mine or 15 on there.
Well, I have two questions about the record. First of all, you used Ray Haight's call of the Belmont Stakes instead of your own. Why?
I just wanted to have more sounds on it. There were enough of mine on there. I don't know how many. I think I 8 or 10 of mine. I wish I had used mine on it. Now
it also has your call of his final race in the Canadian International at Woodbine. How did that come about?
Wynn Elliott sent me up to Woodbine to do the final race on CBS Radio, which I did. He was a great lover of horse racing, Randy, and you know he had Sports Central all weekend, and he did racing from all over the country as part of it. So I got to go up to Canada and call the race. Up at Woodbine in the fog and the mist, but he may and think of the pressure on Eddie Maple to ride the big red horse that day. It was amazing.
Dave, so great to have you here.
Zoe.
All right, Dave, because I'm obviously so much younger than Randy and Bill, I wasn't
and me.
Exactly. I wasn't privy to all of your race calls. Can you please give me a race call? Come on, Dave.
It's Randy in front by half a length, and here comes Zoe on the outside, coupled with Louise's jambalaya. That's how I would. It would be the jambalaya handicap. Bill Finley in the middle of the racetrack, and down the stretch they come. Bill Finley, Zoe between horses, Randy at the rail. It's a photo finish. What a race! What a crew!
Awesome.
I haven't called a race in a long time, Zoe.
That is awesome. But I wanted to ask you, and down the stretch they come, where did that come from? How did you moniker it? And why is it trademarked?
I was using that call when I was at Fairmount Park in the 1960s.
It's fantastic.
Yes. And I got the job at Santa Anita. And the racing sound system there was the same one when I worked there in 1970s as in the 1935 movie Marx Brothers Day at the Races. And in order to be heard over any kind of a crowd, you had to put a rumble underneath. You had to sort of emphasize it. And so that was a phrase I used a lot. And down the stretch, they come so and so. But when this big old white horse Bigers was on his way to the Santa Anita Derby, the handicap, the big cap.
Larry Sterling.
We had, yeah, and what an eye-appealing horse. He used to wheel to the middle of the track and smoke home with Daryl McCarg aboard. But in order to be heard, I pushed it, I pumped it, and down the stretch they come. And then, Zoe, people started to say it back to me. And then the Los Angeles television stations would pick up the call of the race for the evening news at that point, no matter where I said it, at the top of the stretch or the eighth ball or wherever. I was down in Atlanta with my sister one time, and as we were coming down some steps, a man said to me, "And down the steps he comes." That's well, how it happened.
David Letterman certainly liked it as well.
Oh, he loved it. He said he would jump up on the couch up and down during the stretch drive. But I did trademark it. And we've raised almost $300,000 through our good friend Drew Molica, who handles all the contracts and the money. And we've given every penny of it away to racetrack charities, two scholarships, retired jockeys, horses, foundations. It's been a wonderful moneymaker, win-win situation. And that's how it came about.
Dave, tell Zoe, who wasn't even born in 1973, unlike us old guys, what was the, people talk a lot about the country at that time and how, you know, coming out of Watergate, coming out of Nixon, coming out of the Vietnam War. Randy and I were alive. I was too little to really be able to process that, this sort of things. But people say this country needed a hero. Here comes this beautiful, magnificent horse who filled the void. Tell us about that.
Well, just to put it all in perspective, I'm 82 now. So I don't know how old you guys are, but you're a lot younger than I am. So I, while I was calling the races, and I was really good at it, but I was also younger. But in Watergate and Vietnam, and it was before people scratched off lottery tickets and before sports books, racing was the great place to go and make a legal bet. And then along comes this great horse with a great crew. Just think of the crew that it had. Lucian Lauren training and Ronnie riding, Ronnie Turcott. And Mrs. Tweedy was a great cheerleader. She captured the audience. When you'd see her on television rooting for her horse, you wanted her horse to win. So it was all of those things that came together with this magnificent animal. I mean, Secretariat just came at the right time and with the right people, and the sport didn't have the problems, Bill, that it has now with so many diversions. It was a great place where I could make a record, or Bill Knack could write a book, or we could have a television show about it. And people loved Secretariat and loved the story. And it was a hell of a story.
Well, Dave, you saw your share of all-time greats even before Secretariat. Maybe not at Fairmont Park. I love Fairmont Park, but we won't go quite that far. When was it, since you called all of his early races, when was it if you recall, first saying to yourself, wow, this horse could be really something extra special?
Well, Randy, it was before he ever ran. You know, he ran on July the 4th, the following year that Riva Ridge won the Derby and the Belmont. So Riva Ridge had just come back from winning, from losing the Triple Crown, but winning the Derby and the Belmont. So Riva Ridge was a star, and Secretariat had never run. But everybody at the track knew about this big red horse that Lucian Lauren trained that flew like the wind in the morning. And everybody was waiting for this big old horse to show up on the racetrack for a bet. Yeah. So we could bet the horse. You know, the horse went off at 3-1 with Paul Feliciano aboard. Why did Paul, an apprentice jockey, ride? Because Lucian wanted to get a better price. So we all knew about Riva. We all knew about Secretariat because Riva Ridge had been a big star of the year, but everybody knew. And so when he lost his first race, we knew that we could give him another chance. And so, of course, then he won his next race and broke his maiden. And then, I mean, the Sanford and the Hopeful, and, you know, it was quite a 2-year-old year. He was horse of the year as a 2-year-old, Randy, which is unheard of.
Yeah, really, really unheard of. What a terrific time to be in racing and witness Secretariat and call his races. And we've gone from that to where we are now. And I don't know if you realize this, but Bill has finally jumped on the soapbox with Randy about...
Oh, he knows.
Triple Crown. I mean, I didn't think this could ever possibly happen. What are your thoughts on it? I'm pretty sure I know what your thoughts are.
You know, I don't think it'll change in my lifetime, but it could. And I totally understand that it could. And if it does, that's fine. But then you're going to have to put a little asterisk next to any horse that wins. And Zoe, that's the reason. Just think of what Secretariat did in winning the Triple Crown. He won the Bayshore, and then he won the Gotham Mile, and 2 weeks later he won the Wood, and 2 weeks later he won the Derby, and 2 weeks later he won the Preakness. Would anybody do that today? Look what happened at the Derby. Only one horse came back out of the Derby field because the pressure was on him. And I hated him. I bet the winner in the Preakness, as Bill will tell you.
Secretariat were racing today, they would have passed the Preakness. And, that would have been the modern thing. Oh, he's tired after running in the Kentucky Derby. He needs a break. We'll see you at the Travers. Oh, my goodness.
Sure would have passed the Preakness.
Right. Okay. So, Dave, let's talk about the race call. And, so you're 2 minutes and 24 seconds. You're on the microphone giving this call. What do you remember most about not the race, but your race call? And how did it feel to see something unfold in front of you that was something I think most people didn't think they could ever see? Or, I'm not going to see a horse win my Triple Crown race by 31 lengths.
No. I thought he would win. I know Lucien Lauren thought he would win by 10. He told that, before the race, he said, I think I'll win by 10. Ronnie thought he would win. The thing, Bill, that I remember the most about my call was coming through the stretch. And you have to remember, 50 years ago, we as announcers all around the country, we were prohibited from calling the finish unless we were doing it on a radio or TV. And I wasn't. I was calling it for the track. And we couldn't call it under the wire because there was something called the Wire Act of 1938. And it prohibited the result of the race getting outside the confines of the racetrack until the next race was run or official. You remember, I don't think you remember, Zoe, but Bill and Randy, remember when there used to be a string of telephones, and before the first race, right, they would lock them up with chains?
Yes.
So that was immediately I was handcuffed there. But the other thing is that I used in my later years jockey names and trainer names a lot on television, as working with Randy on so many shows. But back then at the New York Racing Association, I couldn't do that. My boss, Pat O'Brien, Pat Lynch, got an inner office memo. It was before emails. And it said, please inform Mr. Johnson that this is not jockey racing, it's horse racing. Don't use the names of jockeys in the call. Well, that's changed a lot. I think I helped change, and Tom Durkin really helped change that a lot, which is great. So I remember, though, in the stretch drive, I called Secretariat in front by 25 lengths at the 16th pole. And I had never called a horse in a race other than a steeplechase race. There were some steeplechase races that were 25 lengths, but never in a race at Belmont. And so I called him in front by 25 lengths at the 16th pole. And then I shut the mic off at the 70 yard mark, saying, it was Secretariat wins the Triple Crown or something. I don't think Naira has the call. Somebody pilfered it, I guess. But that's what I remember, how gigantic the margin of victory was. And it seems like yesterday, Bill. It doesn't seem like 50 years ago.
So, Dave, you referenced Tom Durkin as we get ready to head into this year's Belmont Stakes. What are your thoughts about Tom making a comeback in the Belmont Stakes for Fox? Oh. And does it at all make you wonder, I wonder if I could come back for a one-off like that?
Well, first, let me answer that first. I said to my friend Tom Werblin, I said, I wouldn't come back and call that race for $1 million. And Tom said to me, if my dad was your agent, it would be $5 million. But I think it's great. And I talk and email with Tom all the time. As a matter of fact, we emailed yesterday and today. And I reminded him that I said that if Fox has the 8-year contract, that you can do all 8 years and still be at the finish of that 8 years younger than I am today. So I think it's a great thing that I think Fox is very smart doing it. It's a brilliant move, especially without a Triple Crown possibility. So I think it's great. And he's going to be Tom's terrific. He's out there practicing all weekend at Belmont Park calling it. And as he said to me, he said, I didn't call into tape. There are no more tapes. He said, I use my iPhone.
Modernization at its best. Well, Dave, you're an extremely young looking 82. What do you do for fun nowadays? We know you do the radio show. Are you going back to Ascot this year?
I wish I could. No, I haven't. I won't be going back to Ascot, but I do the radio show from where I'm sitting right now. And Bill and the producer are on the other side of the room. I was watching Fairmount Park earlier today. And Kim Sampson, by the way, Bill, she was on our Sirius XM show. She's 63 years old. She won the fourth race, I believe.
How about that?
At Fairmount Park. So, you know, us old timers, we're okay.
Dave, after the Belmont, I think, you know, people who were in racing that day said, we'll never see anything like this again. And we really haven't. But last year we saw maybe the closest thing to Secretariat's achievements we saw with Flightline. Yeah. How do you compare the two, and what did you think of him?
There was a lot of comparisons, and they used the word Secretariat a lot talking about Flightline. But he had such a limited career, and what was it, six races? How many did he run? Six?
Six races, yes.
I didn't like the comparison because he never really did what Secretariat did in that short amount of time and on various distances, sprints, distance, turf, dirt, slop, fast, firm. But he was extraordinary. And I didn't think, as we talked for the year before, I didn't think I'd ever vote for a horse of the year with six starts or horse into the Hall of Fame, but he deserves it. He was great. That was terrific, but didn't do what Secretariat did. So I don't think you can compare them. Can you compare them, Randy, Zoe?
Just in terms of brilliance, I think he probably was the most brilliant horse we've seen since Secretariat. Maybe Spectacular Bid would be in there, you know. But I agree with you on accomplishments. I don't think he can. Obviously, you know, Secretariat did so much more with 21 lifetime starts, packed a lot of firsts and a lot of records into that 21 race career, didn't he?
And I think it goes that, you know, back in the day, they weren't afraid to get a horse beaten. Like, he was beat, who cares? Let's run him back in 2 weeks. Let's try him on the grass. Let's do that. And he was still brilliant. So it's chalk and cheese. You can't compare horses nowadays to back then, because nowadays you got a good colt, everyone wants to keep him undefeated, which means running them every 3 months, apparently. So it's just apples and oranges. I don't think we're ever going to see that kind of campaign again, which is a shame.
And with the Belmont coming up, that was the highlight, at least for me, of his career. I mean, it was the pinnacle. It was the greatest spectacle in my lifetime of watching horse races, what he did that day. If you brought any horse in the world to the Belmont that afternoon at a mile and a half, Secretariat beats him. It was just spectacular. It was the greatest moment for me in horse racing, was his victory in the Belmont. I don't think he'll ever match it.
Dave, you'd be a better person to weigh in on this than me, but I've said that you take any horse in the history of horse racing, have them run the best races of their life. I mean, Man of War would not have beaten Secretariat that day.
I don't think so.
I mean, they would have lost by 31 lengths, but I really think that. I mean, that's one of those hypotheticals you can never prove. But I think his greatness was so, and that race was, I mean, it was miraculous. It's something that you can't even believe that this is happening.
And it was, nobody could believe it happened. And the people who knew racing in the stands and in the press box, I heard about people in the press box saying, oh, Ronnie's going to get him beat. He's going too fast. It's impossible to keep this, you know, 12 seconds. And it's impossible. And damn, the horse did it. You know, it was amazing. Yeah. So I'm old, but I didn't see Man of War, Bill, or call him. So.
Oh, I thought you called his first race at Jamaica or something like that. Okay. All right. Well, Dave, this has been a real treat. I get to talk to you every Saturday. It's nice on Sirius XM down the stretch on Channel 85 from 10 to 1. A great treat to go down memory lane with you. And we'll have some fun on the radio show as well. as we approach the 50th anniversary of the greatest performance in the history of horse racing.
Thanks, Bill, but thanks for having a little chat with these two. I've worked with Brandy so many Saturday afternoons on ESPN, and Zoe and I, we got to get some more gumbo down to Louise's, all right? Thanks, Bill.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you, Dave. See you. And as this week's guest of the week, Dave will receive a free one-hour tax consultation from the Green Group. If you want to learn more about how they can save you money on your taxes, again, that website is www.greenco.com.
Are you paying too much in taxes? The Green Group can help. There's a reason the most successful owners, breeders, and horsemen select the Green Group as their tax advisors. They save you money and share successful strategies. Over the past 40 years, the Green Group founder, Len Green, has owned and bred some of the best racehorses in the history of the sport, like Eclipse Award-winning champions Jaywalk and Wonderwheel. His DJ stable competes at the highest level and has received the game's most prestigious honors. Len Green's in-depth, hands-on industry knowledge, combined with cutting-edge tax-saving strategies, has produced positive results for his clientele and has made the Green Group the top-rated accounting and tax firm in the thoroughbred business. For a confidential and complimentary consultation, contact us at 732-634-5100 or visit our website at www.greenco.com. The Green Group, proven strategies to save you taxes.
With some of the fullest fields in the country and quality racing year-round, there's never been a better time to reap the rewards of breeding and racing in Kentucky. Purse money in Kentucky is at an all-time high, as is average purse per race, outpacing California, Florida, and New York. Kentucky breds. Breed them. Raise them. Race them. We all win.
The TD and Riders Room brought to you by Kentucky Breads. Following Maesia's win in the Kentucky Derby, Kentucky Bred National Treasure became the ninth consecutive Kentucky Bred to win the Preakness Stakes. You, too, can reap the rewards of breeding and racing in Kentucky. And you talk about money. Combined purse money paid at an all-time high, $165 million in 2022, way up from $134 million, which was big enough, in 2021, average field size in Kentucky, 8.4, higher than Florida, New York, California. Average money per race, purse money, 77,000 plus, outpacing all other racing jurisdictions. With some of the fullest fields in the country, quality racing year round, there is no better time to breed and race in the bluegrass.
And if you believed in Kentucky breds, maybe you would have had Rich Strike as the winner of last year's Kentucky Derby at 80-1, an underlay to me at 80-1, by the way. But let's not pick on Rich Strike because he is a neat horse and did some, that was such a memorable race. But this whole saga of the movie and the owner fighting and the trainer fighting and Eric Reed resigning, the next chapter has been written now. And Rich Strike is going to none other than Bill Mott to be his new trainer. Don't think the owner, Rick Dawson, could have picked a better person. Bill Mott is as good as it gets in this business, but he's going to have his work cut out for him. His horse is not only, you know, has he lost six straight since the Kentucky Derby, but his recent form has been very poor. And in a story that Randy didn't read because he was busy reading the racing form, I talked to Rick Dawson, and he said, the next race, I just want him to be competitive. Just don't want him to, you know, run up the track and see where we go from there. But Randy, can Bill Mott work some magic with Rich Strike?
I think that sounds like your quote of Rick Dawson. He's striking the right tone right now about Rich Strike, because he's really got to turn it around. His form is deteriorating. He had a bad race with no obvious excuse in the Clark, and then they gave him time off and said he was training really well, and he basically just ran around the racetrack behind the field in the Ali Sheba on the Oaks undercard at Churchill Downs. So that's two honestly, that's two allowance caliber races back to back for our upset Kentucky Derby winner. So they've really got to turn things around. If the horse is good enough to turn things around, and that's an if, then Bill Mott will get the best out of him. You know that.
He's still eligible for his A other than condition. So he's got many, many ways to go. Physically, he looks in good shape. I watched him in the paddock at Churchill, and he's a beautiful looking horse. And they're going to give him a little bit of respite. He's at Blackwood right now, just going through the motions before he gets to Mott. I think he's going to get three horses from Rick Dawson, and the other ones are going to go to Jerry O'Dwyer. But, I mean, look what Mott did to the horse that won the Pacific World Cup. My gosh, my brain's not
Art working. Collector.
Art Collector. He turned the horse around. The horse was good initially. Tom Drury did a great job with him, and then he went down. And then Bill got him. And he went up again. So Bill's a magic maker, and we'll see what he can do with Rich Strike. I wish him the best of luck. I really did.
Yeah, and Dawson said that he hopes to have the horse ready to run in Saratoga, maybe the Whitney, perhaps the Jockeyco Gold Cup at a mile and a quarter would be more his cup of tea. Fusaichi Pegasus passed away this week, famous for winning the Kentucky Derby in 2000, also famous for selling for back in the day before $4 million was really $4 million back then, sold for $4 million at the Keeneland sale that used to be held in July. I'm just trying to think, that's probably about $10 million in today's dollars. And Randy, what are some of your memories of Fupeg?
Fupeg. Well, I remember that Neil Drysdale did not like his horse being called Fupeg. I know that. He thought that was a very undignified name for a Kentucky Derby winner. It was a fun time covering that horse because for many reasons. It was fun to hear Neil banter with the media. You know, Neil Drysdale was not one to really love the throngs of media that at the time descended on the backstretch at Churchill Downs. And there would be some repartee between Drysdale and the media. You know, pity the media member who would come up to Drysdale and say something like, "So, Neil, your horse looked really good in the Wood Memorial." And then there would be silence. And Drysdale would say, "And your question is?" But I was actually had a funny exchange with Drysdale. If you remember, before the Wood Memorial, okay, now the horse had all kinds of antics in the morning, right? TVG had him flipping on their work show to the ground, going to the ground one morning before the Kentucky Derby on the backstretch. The horse was just playful, in Drysdale's words. Drysdale said he would be worried if the horse stopped doing things like that. But before the Wood Memorial, he froze in the walk to the starting gate, and they couldn't get him going again, and he delayed the start, and finally they got him going, and they got him to the gate. So I'm kind of shooting the breeze a little bit with Jay Hovday, and I said, yeah, I wonder if Neil's concerned about the crowd and about Fupeg with 150,000 people and all those people in the infield, you know, by freezing up again. And Jay said, "Why don't you go ask him?" And I said, "Sure." And Jay said, "Can I tag along?" I said, "Yeah, no problem." So I went up to Neil and I posed that question. And Neil went, "So how far does he have to go from the finish line to the starting gate?" And I said, "About a quarter of a mile." "How fast do you think the horse can run a quarter of a mile?" I said, "Well, easily 22 seconds. And how much time do I have to get him to the gate?" I said, "Well, you got 9 or 10 minutes. He said, "I think we'll be okay." But it was, he was quite the worst. But it was a flop as a stallion, though. He really was. The answer to a trivia question, I'll be floored if either of you two can get this trivia question. Name the horse, the American-based horse, that won more money than any son or daughter of Fusaichi Pegasus. His number one.
Don't have the faintest idea.
International Star. I didn't give Zoe a chance to guess. You wouldn't have guessed International Star.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I don't know. He did sign a 6 champions. So
in Japan, mean, or?
All over. Yeah. All over. So that's
Australia, Japan.
I was actually there when he was sold. It was, I looked it up because I know I was there. The 21st of July, 1998, I was actually working the July sale. That was back when the July sale was fun at Keeneland. Everyone got dressed up. It was like going to Saratoga. And I was working. We all heard about this horse that was going to make all the money. So we got done. And it was when the old bar at Keeneland was just a regular old bar. You could take your dogs in there. And we all ran up to the grandstand and grabbed our beer and watched this horse. Because I wasn't there in the 80s when Snaffy Dancer sold for $13 million or what have you. But we ran up and watched him sell. And I was galloping horses at Keeneland for Chris Becker. John Ward purchased the horse for Mr. Segaguchi, and he broke him at Keeneland at his training center. I can remember seeing him. He was always a pain in the ass, right? He would, there was a show horse guy that was the only one that could get on him for John Ward. This guy was about 200 pounds. And we would just see this one colt just rearing up constantly, constantly. And we're like, oh, is that the one they paid all the money for? Good luck with that one, the $4 million yearling. And then he wound up going out to Neil Drysdale. And Andy Dernan used to get on him every day. Poor old Andy might have to go to the car for some liquid courage before he got on him every day after the break. Because if he wasn't rearing up, you don't know what he was doing. Every day he would rear up going to the track. And Neil, he's okay. Just give him a pet, Andy. Just give him a pet. And that was just what Fusaichi Pegasus did. Neil trained into the minute. Andy Dernan rode him to the minute every single day. And Andy's a fabulous rider. He's still galloping to this day. One of the best riders you'll ever see on a horse.
This fascinates really? Me about genetics, right? Fusaichi Pegasus spent more time on his two hind legs almost than he did on all four legs, right? About 8 or 10 years later, I'm somewhere on the backside and some horses, you know, walking around the barn and comes out, rears up on his hind legs. And the trainer goes, damn, Fusaichi Pegasus. And I said, what do you mean? He said, it's a sire. They all do it.
Right.
Every Fusaichi Pegasus I've seen loves to rear up on his hind legs. Now, how weird is that?
Yeah, he was good at it. He barely ever toppled over. And Andy knew. He knew just how far he could take him.
Well, so, R.I.P. Fusaichi Pegasus.
Yeah, absolutely. The XBTV workout of the week is anywho. When I asked Sue Finley to get this work, she's like, who? I'm like, anywho. Anywho. Anywho worked 5 furlongs on May the 28th for trainer John Sadler in company with her stablemate Battlecall, always going better than her company. She is a perfect 2 for 2 and did actually ship to Churchill Downs Derby Week to run. She got a temperature on the plane and was subsequently not entered. She is slated to run in Saturday's Summertime Oaks at her home base at Santa Anita. You better bet on her. She looks terrific.
All the thrills. Fraction of the bills. Experience the power of the partnership. Change your life, make new friends, and compete at the highest level of thoroughbred racing. West Point Thoroughbreds, the gold standard in racing partnerships. Visit westpointtb.com.
The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by West Point Thoroughbreds. Joining a West Point Thoroughbred can literally vault you right into the winner's circle for a fraction of the price. On Saturday at Churchill, Western Command relished the wet track and blazed home to win handily under jockey Edgar Morales. That gave West Point their 5th win of the Churchill meet, tops for all owners. Are you interested in joining a West Point Thoroughbred? If so, just visit westpointtb.com and click on Available Horses.
That's a wrap for another edition of the TDN Writers Room. I want to thank my cohorts, Randy Moss and Zoe Cadman, the Green Group Guest of the Week, and my good friend Dave Johnson. Our co-producers, Katie Petruniak and Anthony LaRocca, our editors, Aaliyah LaRocca and Nathan Wilkinson. And we had two mascots this week, Doodle and Lucy. So where'd they go?
Lucy's pacing back here. She's hungry. She's on the rampage.
All right, Lucy, we're almost done. Randy will feed you dinner in just a second. So anyways, thanks for viewing us. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week here on the TDN Writers.